Session number 13266.
Mr. Branson, ring three.
Bill, with his 8th platoon, was to leave the road on the left-hand side. Actually, there was a kind of a high wall. I think it was the edge of some French estate with a kind of a Norman-like closed door in the wall. But Bill was supposed to go through this door and check out that the outskirts of the hamlet were clear. And I would have then taken over the lead from him. Spike Rice, the company commander, told me that Bill Sykes had missed the gate where he's supposed to have turned off and had carried on. So he said that we'd have to alter the plan, and I must have to check out the outskirts of the village. At the time, I felt as if I'd rather not have had this task, because when we kicked open the gate, there was a rising open ground that led up to a copse, and it didn't look a healthy path to traverse at all, because one obviously expecting that from the edge of the woods there's a likelihood of German fire. Nevertheless, we went through the normal processes of giving ourselves cover and made up towards the woods. But the striking thing about it was there was a deathly silence. Rather than a noisy opposition, there was a deathly silence in these woods. And as we looked round to see if there's any activity, we came across a pile of bodies, literally a pile of bodies. They were Canadians of the Winnipeg Rifles, and they were piled high, and all their boots were missing. The Canadians had a kind of an inbuilt boot with a high, instead of having separate gaiters, it was a kind of a high boot. And the thought went through my mind that these boots would be in demand. And then I thought, well, how on earth could it was like a platoon strength of men. There must have been 30 men there. I thought, how on earth could they get caught in a situation like this? But nevertheless, it was a chilling experience. It's always when one sees German dead, there's one's fairly dispassionate. When you see your own dead, it gets to you a little more. But nevertheless, this was a passing phase. We got our clear objective. We'd got to participate in this move to this high ground. So that was something that happened, and I rem in the back of my mind, but there wasn't time to dwell on it. I remember telling Spike Rice that we'd come across these Canadians, and that was it. There was too much on hand otherwise. We made our way up onto this point 103. Now, I suppose, unfortunately for Bill Sykes, unfortunately for me, with the change of position, Bill had to dig in on the forward slope of Hill 103, and I was on the top of the hill alongside a small track, and that's where we were supposed to dig in, and this was a feature we'd got to hold. Whilst we were trying to dig in, we were getting fire from the back of us because of our advanced position, and we felt quite jubilant when Lance Corporal Frost in one of the sections spotted a sniper in a tree to our rear and fetched him tumbling down with his Bren gun, which got rid of the fire from behind us. We dug in as far as we could here, but it was really, I think the night was fairly uneventful, but the next day the Germans launched a very heavy counterattack on this high ground, and we were pinned down. There was a tank to our right, firing small arms fire and armour-piercing shells, and the shells seemed to be feet above our head, a real frightening sound. And every time we tried to move, there was stronger Spandau fire. I mentioned earlier about John, because I was aware that he was on the forward slope, and I was very anxious to see what was happening to him. The first opportunity we got, I was able to crawl across the track and look down the forward slope, and much to our horror, the tanks were amongst Bill's platoon, and we'd really got no weapons to combat this. But I remembered from my experience in the tanks how much tanks, particularly when they closed down, they're all right in their own smoke, but their fears of being enshrouded in other people's smoke when they closed down are considerable. I ordered my my mortar team to fire smoke at full range beyond Bill's position, and it seemed a rather pathetic, but it seemed the only thing to do. And after a few minutes, three men came from the platoon, really bedraggled, his platoon sergeant and two other men. They were still in the shirt sleeves because they'd been trying to dig deeper into their position. They were eternally grateful for the smoke cover that made them enable them to make the break from the position, but I'm afraid the rest of them were lost. And the battalion as a whole was getting a pretty heavy battering. I know C Company on the left was suffering, and at this stage I found out later that the second in command, Major Dixon, lost his life in the action, and there were others, but Spike Rice at this stage, although he was not particularly the senior company commander, had to take control of the battalion until this action was over. As dusk fell, I got a message to pull about 100 or so yards back for the battalion to kind of consolidate on some holding position, which we did. But then it was the task to hold this high ground. We must have been down to half strength because I was by this time I was the only platoon commander left. I realised I didn't mention the other platoon commander was a young second lieutenant called Greaves. His name was Jimmy Greaves. And in the action that I mentioned earlier at San Gabriel, he too was wounded, and so that was another loss. But after this action on at Point 103, I was the only officer in A Company, as Spike was leading the battalion. But we hung on there. We dug in deeply and hung on for another day. And we were really feeling as if we'd had our share, having made the initial assault. I don't think we'd quite appreciated that we'd be kept in battle or in this kind of situation for a week. which is perhaps foolish to think like that. But I think it was about the 13th of June when the 49th Division had landed by this time, and I think it was the Staffordshire Regiment that were going to relieve us on this dominant point. And this they did in the evening of June the 13th. And we were able to pull out the line for the first time, and it was a night march from there back to the outskirts of Bayeux.
What was morale like by this time?
Well, I must admit, it was, we marched pretty quickly when we were returning to Bayeux. There was an atmosphere of relief. I noticed men's faces getting paler and more drawn, and they were young men. I mean, actually, I was 22 on D-Day, it was my birthday, but I'd got some men in the platoon as young as 19 and 20. But no, everyone looks drawn, and it was with some relief that we were able to make our way back from the line. We slept. We found ourselves just outside Bayeux, and for the first time since landing, we're able to, because we never take our boots off in the infantry, but we on this occasion we could take our boots off and go to sleep, knowing that we hadn't got to be watching out for ourselves with our own, and that we're far enough back to get some sleep. And I think I slept till midday the next day. And then we tramped into Bayeux, and the object was to take the battalion through some public showers in Bayeux. It was a bit of relief from the battle scene. The showers were manned by two or three buxom French women, and we were all running in to get cleaned up, but they were allowed, I think if we were allowed a minute under the showers, that was all. By the time we'd got the soap on, they were turning the water off. There was a lot of shouting and screaming to get a bit more water, but that was an opportunity to at least to get a good shower. The respite was short-lived because that same afternoon we had to make our way back up to the forward lines again. On our approaches, we were passing the usual sights of bodies lying about the place and blown up bodies. and burnt out tanks as we got nearer the line again. But this time we were making towards a bit further on the right than we had been previously. We were moving to a village called Longray. Of course, we were fairly depleted at this stage, and I think, well, my A company was fairly light, and as I mentioned, I was the only officer, so it fell to B company to try and get through the village of Longray. They had a nasty passage there, because from what I can remember, the Germans waited for the first two or three sections to get into the village before they opened fire, but they took a lot of B company out there.
What with?
Spandau fire. They had to make a hasty retreat over a small river, and they had a nasty experience there. When they pulled out, it fell to my platoon to go and hold the ground overlooking Longray for the evening. We moved into this position and dug in as quickly as we could, and we were absolutely bristling with ammunition to defend ourselves, extra rations of grenades and what have you. As we dug in, we were being mortared. Then there was the waiting during the night. There was a tank in the vicinity that opened up, and I lost one or two men wounded. Apart from fairly heavy mortaring from time to time, there was no battle occurred. And here again, I got a message in the morning to regroup again, but I wasn't sorry to leave there. Our next move was further forward, into some woods on the right-hand side of Longray, overlooking a road that went to a place called Otto. And we dug in on the front edge of these woods. Now, this was a nasty position, because there was incessant mortaring, and it didn't help being in the area of the trees. Each night we were having to patrol and in turns, and I know brother officers, platoon commanders, I knew they were going out. We heard mines going off, and each night there seemed to be somebody else claimed on these patrols. There was a lot of mines. I lost a lot of men through mines. We tried to establish ourselves while here. We used to have, obviously, we were the Germans occasionally seemed to break into our lines, and we were trying to dominate the area between the two parties. In fact, I think that the order of the day was to dominate no man's land. It seemed an old-fashioned expression. But it felt to me to take a fighting patrol forward, which, as opposed to going out on recces, means exactly what it says, that you take your whole platoon with a view to take it on whatever you meet. On this occasion, I remember well, the time was set to leave our positions at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and move forward to a given position. across the Otto Road and beyond, in the area of a place called Le Lion Vert. Here again, as we left the positions at 2 o'clock, we were under pretty heavy mortar fire, and I can remember fairly wistful looks on some of the men's face, you know, do we have to go now? But nevertheless we went, and we crossed this Otto Road, which seemed like a motorway when I look back, because it was so open and seemed such a an open place to put ourselves. I know in this venture forward we found a soldier who had been left behind on a previous skirmish somewhere in the Green Howards. It's a wonder we didn't shoot and kill him, because there was a lot of that going on in Normandy, that anything that moved, people shot, and they did sometimes take out their own people. Very often, on the other hand, it was cattle or other farm animals. The place was littered with cows with the legs in the air, blown up, and there was a terrible sweet smell of them rotting. Anyway, we picked up this fella from the Green Howards, and he was glad to have a piggyback back to our lines. But my task was to take the platoon forward, we were alongside a track with a bit of a meadow again in front, and having reached this point, I got back on our small wireless sets. We used to call them number sevens, I think, number seven sets, to see whether we were to dig in or not, or what. Anyway, Spike Rice said, "Will you recce further forward?" So on this occasion, it was a matter of me going with a couple of other men. So I left the platoon digging in to as far as they could, although we were in a kind of a sheltered, self-made defensive position. So I selected Corporal Gill and Private White, who was a sniper, and the three of us set off forward. Follow the normal practice of making our way down hedgerows. Corporal Gill was at the front and I was in the middle, and White was being in the rear. When we'd gone forward 100 yards or so, there was a German self-propelled gun not far away on the right-hand side beyond the hedgerow, started to open up, not at us, because they didn't know we were there, in retaliation, our own 25-pounders counter-fired, so we were having to put up with our own 25-pounder fire whilst we were trying to make our reconnaissance forward. Nevertheless, we pressed on, and it's really, looking back, it's only a matter of going on until you attract some fire, and this we did. Suddenly on the rising ground above us, in front of us, we saw the smoke from the Spandau gun. We could see the Germans manning it, and as we dropped down, the bullets were spluttering all round us. Our only cover at this stage was the high corn on the left of us. So we were kind of trapped in this corn, like sitting ducks. I wondered if any of us any of the other two had been hurt, and I was quite relieved when I got a response from Corporal Gill and from White at the back of me. But every time we moved, there was another outburst of fire. So we'd got our small packs on our backs. So I said, well, slide out of your packs and then perhaps we can start crawling without attracting the fire. So we did this, and I never thought I'd have to do a leopard crawl for such a long time and under such conditions. But nevertheless, we managed to turn around and make our way back to the platoon. I got particularly anxious to do this because I could see the Germans leaving their position in some force. It looked as if there was a platoon of them coming out now, where they were coming, thinking they'd be able to pick us up and find something out about us. So it was really a race of getting back to the platoon position and beating the Germans to it. There's the awful few seconds when we had to run back to our own platoon, hoping that we weren't going to be too trigger happy and take us out. Anyway, we got back, and no sooner we slid into the well of this road, Sergeant Harley had got the men all prepared. We could hurriedly tell him that they were being followed, and as the Germans, it was really a trap by a fluke. As the Germans broke into this meadow, we found ourselves into a position where they were 20 yards ahead, and we took them all out and left. It was our turn to leave a pile of bodies.
With Bren guns?
Yes, Bren guns do the damage. We all the Bren guns are the firepower of our infantry section. Every man carries spare Bren gun ammunition. It was one of the first situations that we kind of felt were on the right. We were doing the winning, although it was a precarious position because we didn't know what was going to happen. And I must admit again, it was with some relief when a message came through to pull back to our original position, because we were out on a limb a bit.